Lectionary Lab Live is recorded in the studios of the 405 Oxford Group, Gainesville, Florida, and Brasstown, North Carolina, a Two Bubbas and a Bible production.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless, here with my bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, bubba.
Hey, bubba.
Man, good to hear from you. We're going to talk some text today. We're getting ready for the fourth Sunday of Easter. These are the texts for May the 11th, 2014. I want to welcome you back from your West Coast journeys, trying to get you back into the correct time zone here today as we record the show. But give us a quick word. You spent a good bit of time with pastors, preachers, and not to mention your elder son, David, there. And I hope you had a good time.
Had a good time. First church down, Methodist church in downtown Seattle. I go by First Church. Northwest Festival of Preaching. Conversation, preaching, lectures, all sorts of stuff. And actually, my buddy Larry and my son Joseph, David, like me, like to eat. And so I ate good. Well, all weekend, too.
There you go.
Variety of places.
You can always come away with something good out of an experience like
you
that.
Know, you have some friends, you get together, they say, where you want to eat? I don't know. And then there are other friends that immediately they say, I got this place, I got to take you.
There you go.
Those are the friends you want to go hang out with. They had places they wanted to take me.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, glad to have you back. Always glad when... somebody I know travels safely and travels well. We've got texts today, a little bit more of the book of Acts getting started. The oh so familiar, but always good, Psalm 23, a little bit more from Peter, and then the Good Shepherd, or is it, in John chapter 10 today.
That's right.
And interesting stuff to talk about. Lead us on in. What do you want to say as we think about preaching this week? And then let's jump in the scriptures.
This is one of those non-liturgical Sundays. I mean, it isn't on the calendar.
Right.
That way it's not listed. It's not on any commemoration, but it always falls. The fourth Sunday in Easter is Good Shepherd Sunday, at least
Sunday,
among the Lutherans and the Episcopalians.
The Good Shepherd. Yep. That's it.
There are a couple of ways to go about this today. I think one is to preach to the day. I mean, every text can come to this. If the Acts text is a little more difficult, but you can get there at some level. Mm-hmm. But at least three of them, direct reference, Peter had gone astray like sheep, and of course, Psalm 23. And one of the things you could do is before we get into the particular text, one is you could take a text and particularly the gospel and talk about from the traditional kind of point of view, the shepherding of God. You know, and how God cares for us and, you know, those kind of pieces. And that's a fairly traditional sermon for this day. Nothing wrong with it. It may be where the congregation is, needs mm-hmm. to have that sense of God's presence. But there's a kind of alternative, kind of counterculturally talking about what kind of shepherd is Jesus and, you know, playing off that image with some of the really, countercultural stuff that's in all this text and some frightening stuff that's in some of these texts and as a way of saying, what does this mean for us? I'd like to probably start with John and then play off the other text along some of those latter lines that I was talking about of how do we confront how does the text confront us with these things rather than that one?
Yeah, and I think that's a helpful question any time, but especially on a date like this where, as you say, you've got a non-official, almost liturgy here that's expected by some congregations. You also have the clash of the calendar. This is Mother's Day.
Yes.
And
yes.
You got people coming to church, and depending on your setting and where you are and what kind of traditions you have to deal with, just almost expect you to say something, you know, about mothers and love and all of that. So in the midst of that, when a preacher feels pulled, I think a great question to come back to is to say, well, this is the text. where and how does the text confront us today? Where does the text cause us to look? And I may have to let the calendar and even the semi-official church calendar kind of recede into the background in order to look at the text.
So right.
Just kind of recognizing where we are. Let's do talk about John chapter 10 then. And I want to talk a little bit at some point about, we automatically assume this is speaking of Jesus as a good shepherd, and yet the text itself raises some different kind of images here.
Yeah, it does. You walk through this text, and it's coming back and forth a little bit. There are a couple of questions, as you say, it comes up once. He says something about being the shepherd, but then he says, "I'm the gate." Mm-hmm. Later on, so as you say, and then there's the thieves and the bandits, and Jesus doesn't say, "I'm the shepherd." It says the one who enters by the gate is the shepherd. Mm-hmm. He calls his sheep, so it's that third person. They know his voice. They won't follow a stranger. One of my favorite lines in here is verse 6, in which he says, Jesus said to use this figure of speech with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. Huh? What? Did you get that? I mean, I felt like when I read that, I started laughing. It was like this week at the conference, and I'm sitting with my friend Larry, and somebody says something. You're trying to write that down, and you miss something else. So you're looking on each other's paper. You're trying to figure out what
you get that.
Yeah. Did you get that? So I could see Jesus' disciples out there going, "Do you? What is he talking about? Who? The gate? Who? What?"
I have to admit, in my Monty Python inflicted brain, I get an image of the life of Brian here, you know, when they think he says, "Blessed are the cheesemakers." Well, is he speaking of only cheese, or is the whole dairy industry in general? You know, they're having this conversation among themselves. I didn't get that. What does he mean?
So what's interesting is he does this piece at the beginning in which it feels like Jesus is saying, the people follow the shepherd. The people do this, you know, and that's, oh, it's Jesus. He's the shepherd. He's the good, you know, and this sort of thing. And then, well, they didn't understand. So then when he explains it, he says, "I am the gate for the sheep." He never says he is the good shepherd, which is an interesting image. And one of the things I think it leads us to is the struggle with in this text. What does it mean, this whole business, those who enter by me will be saved and will come in and go out and find pasture? The thief only comes to steal and kill and destroy. So one way to read that is, cannot be saved except through Jesus, you know?
Right.
Jesus only, which is a controversial issue for some people these days. So one of the questions is, how do we, depending on our context, how do we preach that? Is salvation only through Jesus Christ? And if it is it only through the sinner's prayer, the Roman road to salvation? Mm-hmm. Is it only through that? Or is salvation being through Christ something other than the Charles G. Finney revival moment when you accept Jesus? Could there be a different vision of what it means to be saved and what that means? I'm not answering that question because everybody's theology is different. I'm saying it's a question to be raised from your context with this text.
Well, it is an interesting question. And again, if I'm going to the text, the passage begins with Jesus saying, now look, these thieves, these bandits, all these people who are trying to do something else, they don't come in through the gate. They're trying to jump over, you know, the fence or sneak in under, or maybe drop down from above. Who knows exactly what's intended there? But there is something here, Jesus saying, I'm the gate. And you almost want to fill in and say, anybody's welcome to come in the gate. Right. You know, I'm here. Whosoever will may come. And, you know, you come in and out and there's pasture. And we begin to kind of connect back now to Psalm 23 and the still waters and the green pastures and all of that. There's nothing exclusionary, as I read Jesus saying, no. I'm the gate. Anybody can come. It's this whole trying to do something else kind of deal, you know, trying to make the gospel into something other than the wide mercy of God, the story of Christ as God with us. We were talking just before the show, you were sharing a couple of things with me from your conference, and you mentioned one of the speakers saying something, a challenge, you know. We talk an awful lot about Jesus, but we don't talk much about Christ, the salvific image of the Christ. And maybe that's part of the challenge that we as preachers really do have to wrestle with here. Jesus being the gate and being the way is not in and of itself an exclusive statement.
Well, to tie two texts off of one another, one mm-hmm. early, the one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. Mm-hmm. Then you go down into, I think it's 8 or 9, whoever enters by me will be saved. Mm-hmm. So Jesus is not the one entering.
Right.
He's not the shepherd. He is probably the gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. So who is the shepherd? And I think we are. I think the church is the shepherd and the world is the sheep. We are to come and go through the gate. We are the shepherd who are to go out and tend to the world on God's behalf.
That's it.
And that's where this is coming from. And so when we're talking about Good Shepherd Sunday, we may be talking about some ourselves rather than about God, about Jesus. I mean, yeah. Jesus is a good shepherd. I mean, Lord, I remember Holy Trinity, the important window, you know, with the Jesus with the sheep on his shoulders, you know, from the 90 and 9. It's been a powerful image. And yeah, I do see Jesus as the shepherd and keeper of my soul. But that does not preclude me and the church itself being shepherds to the world, caring for the world in the name of God. And I think this is really where this text is going.
I certainly believe that that is a fruitful image, and I think yeah. it should challenge us. Part of the fine line we walk with salvation is all of God and none of me is the temptation to capitulate and say, well, there you go. See, there's nothing I can do. Therefore, there's nothing I should do. I'm just going to roll back into the green pastures and enjoy myself for a while. But this text positions that much more actively. And I do believe there's a challenging word here for us as pastors and as Christians, as the church, to come and go by the way of the gate here, which is Jesus, going and finding the good pastures and doing as any shepherd would, bringing the sheep to that place. So I do think that's an imaginative and a needed maybe correction or at least way for us to consider this text today.
Another place to work with this text has to do with this whole business of hearing the voice and how recognizing the voice and the many voices there are in the world. I think that's a fruitful direction you could go with this. I mean, there's so many images in this text. And as one of the speakers this week talked about, we've always tried to talk about the meaning. And really, there are many meanings within it, you know, there within a text. Some things are wrong meanings, but there are multiple things to go from. And one of them is just it would be fruitful to explore the many voices that are crying for our attention. And how do we sort through the noise to know that we're hearing the voice? You know, thieves and bandits these days, you know, they don't just, they don't sneak in the middle of the night and grab you up. They entice you with their voice. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking of imagery, you know, everybody's on the internet and everybody's getting emails from somebody who purports that they've got, have I got a deal for you?
Yeah.
Do you recognize that voice or not? Is that the right voice? How does one hear the voice? Mm-hmm. And know, how do you recognize the voice? And the other one is, once you've heard the voice, do you just enjoy it? Boy, he's got a nice voice.
Yeah.
I love it when he comes around. And there's a business of following. You know, he will lead. So I think that's a fruitful direction to go in is hearing the voice and following the voice. And follow where you need to go.
Closing with sharing the abundance of the Christ life. That's again such a great phrase. I can remember from Bible studies of my youth thinking, wow, this is great that Jesus has given this to me and I may come and I may have abundance life. And again, if you're not careful, it becomes that I hope everybody hears me with the grace I feel in my heart for this. But, you know, I heard an awful lot. Well, if I were the only sinner in the world, Jesus would have died for me. And I get that kind of sentiment. However, I'm not the only sinner in the world. And this is not just for me. And that's how I see this abundant life, and particularly in terms of the call to be a shepherd to others. wow, look at this pasture. Wow, look at this water. Look at this. You know, this is a life that Christ, the gate, is opening to. And it is for sharing. It is an incredible gift that we're given. And yeah, we have a part in it. We have a part in it.
My daddy used to say about the Garden of Eden, he said, yeah, it's a great gift, but somebody's got to hoe and cut and prune and harvest. He said, an abundant life is full of things to do.
That's right.
That's a positive thing.
Yeah.
And so when I hear people talking about an abundant life, and I know it's meant appropriately and gratefully, but when people say, I've been blessed, 9 out of 10 times they're going to tell you about some material thing that came their way.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't help ourselves in this culture somehow. Yeah. And then, you know, the prosperity culture, I'll have to tell you, prosperity gospel is just the cruder version in this culture. Most of us are nowhere near tacky enough to say, I've been good, so God gives me stuff.
Right.
You know, but because, you know, as we'd rather be sinful than tacky, you know, mm-hmm. but we do think that way. We get in this mode of, hasn't God been good to me? And we're thinking about the things we have. And somehow we tie that to an abundant life.
Mm-hmm.
I see an abundant life as a life full of people I care about, who care about me, that we work together relative to an abundance of a call to do something. I have an abundant need to help the world, to care for others. I have an abundance of work to do in terms of feeding the hungry and caring for the naked and countering the death dealing of this culture. And that's an abundant life, an abundant life in which you have something that matters, that you care deeply about and you're engaged in.
Well, you mentioned that certainly three of these four texts all tie together, and I think the opening passage from Acts is probably the one that doesn't as much. Can we cut that one out for just a second and come back to it? I do have a thought on it and its relationship to these others. Take us back to Psalm 23, which again can certainly be read, oh, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. It's all about what God is lining up to do for me. And again, all these images of abundance and, oh, isn't this just wonderful? I just want to wallow around in it for a while. Does this passage challenge that assumption a little bit? What do you, on this day, what do you want to say about Psalm 23?
Well, if, you know, I would, separate from what it does mean standing alone.
Mm-hmm.
Within the context of this language, then I want to talk about what would it mean for us to be a shepherd of others. Are we ready to take up a rod and a staff on behalf of somebody else as they walk through the valley?
Yeah,
that's where it leapt out at me as I began to think about that imagery of the one who comes and goes at the gate is both saved and the shepherd. Then looking at Psalm 23, I began thinking about, well, what does it mean if I turn this around and I am called of God to be shepherding others?
Mm-hmm.
How willing am I to take up a rod and a staff? And the staff is that which with which the shepherd protects the sheep in his care, lifts them out of danger, dons them. The rod's where you beat off the predators.
Mm-hmm.
How willing am I to engage? And I'm a pastor in the state of North Carolina, where the state legislature is doing what I think are a significant number of things that are harming the poor and harming the public schools. How willing am I to jump into the fray on behalf of people who are suffering? I'm currently don't have a kid in the public schools. I don't, neither my wife nor myself nor my children are teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on unemployment. I'm not, you know, there are multiple things where it doesn't hurt me.
Right.
Am I, maybe God's being good to me. The taxes are going down.
Yeah.
Or am I willing to take a rod and jump into the fray on behalf of somebody who, for whom this, the way the legislation is going, is creating a valley of the shadow.
That's just
an illustration. I'm not calling people to join in that. That's my struggle in this, with this text. How willing am I to give up on some things that I like having in order to give more to the food pantry because more people are hungry in Cherokee County, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Am I willing to take up a rod? That's where that text is calling me today.
Yeah. Well, that's the power of a point of view. And what you've done by shifting the point of view from the gospel is to read Psalm 23 from a different point of view. If the Lord has been my shepherd, and I read through these very familiar verses, and I'm used to saying, yeah, that's how God's been with me. God's restored my soul. God's the one who's protected me. God's been there in the presence of mine enemies and in the dark places. Now, all of a sudden, to say, so will I be the shepherd for and with others? Will I show up in the dark valley? Will I walk amidst the presence of enemies? Will I be there with the anointing oil? I just think that's extremely valuable and is a good practice for us to at least raise the questions, to at least consider a different point of view, particularly when you come to passages that are as familiar as Psalm 23.
And if you're working then with this whole image of the good shepherd and flipping it to us being shepherds, then you get into that first lesson from Acts where it says all who believed were together and had all things in common would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. Suddenly, you're part of a community of shepherds who are shepherding the world through using their resources to care for those in need. That to me is a piece of that tie and a part of that. This isn't the warm, fuzzy day that I thought it was of God taking care of me, because I don't want to give away my stuff. I like my stuff. But it sounds like the gospel's calling me to use my stuff for a purpose other than for me. You mean it's not all about me?
Which is exactly what these texts are doing, if we will allow them. They're challenging this idea, firmly and comfortably entrenched in what many of us have been taught. And, you know, we've just become enculturated. And by that, I mean enculturated. The culture of the church has
right.
comfortably appropriated the fact that this is all for us. This is God being good to us, that we almost deserve this. It's so funny how quickly we move from the gospel of grace, I didn't deserve any of this, to the comfortable position of, well, yeah, we deserve this. We've been pretty good. We've been working pretty hard, you know. After all, we are devoted. The Acts passage starts off, they devoted themselves to teaching and fellowship and praying, and we're doing all these things. But to flip it around and say, wait a minute, it is not all about me. And this idea of all things in common, that's not a popular idea these days. Again, I don't want to get off on my politics, but this is about living. This is about what the gospel does in our midst. And if we are shepherds for one another, if we are shepherds to the world, following the example of Christ, well, no wonder this passage concludes the way it does. They were praising God, and lo and behold, they had the goodwill of all the people. and God was doing stuff every day, you know.
Signs and wonders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, people say, I wonder why God, you know, I've said to people, so, well, I wonder why God doesn't do stuff like that anymore. And I said, because we don't do stuff like the next verse. You know, it works together.
Yeah.
The signs and wonders and praise. I mean, it invokes a community in which people believe that God is insanely present.
That's a good phrase.
Insanely present.
Yeah.
He is just there. People that believe they're talking to God and God are present with them by the psychological society are considered nuts. So I meant that.
Well,
God, a community that really, honestly doesn't talk as much, that talks to God as well as about God.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well,
and
I do.
And believes themselves wrapped in the presence of the Holy Spirit and God and are obedient to the text and what we're called to be doing together, then stuff happens.
Yeah. Well, we are still, after all, in the season of Easter. There's a reason we're observing the fourth Sunday of Easter today. And I think this is the radical thing that we have a lot of trouble understanding. And when I say we, I want to include myself in the group. But these crazy people thought Jesus was really alive. and that God was really with them. I mean, they were crazy, and we would call them crazy. And to speak like this and act and live like this today is to risk being called crazy. Yep. They really thought Jesus was with them. They really thought God was with them. They really saw God's hand at work in this. So me sharing my stuff, it's not my stuff. It's God's stuff.
That's right.
And God's given it to me for a reason.
You know, Fleming Rutledge made it pretty clear when she said, it's not a spiritual journey. It's not exploring your inner child. You have been commandeered by God, thrust into the public and said, speak on my behalf. It's not about willingness. It's about you have no other choice. Mm. And it provoked that sense that, you know, are we in the hands of God? I think that's true. Once you have that perspective on it, it changes. And, you know, Rodney Stark on this end line about this lesson from Acts in The Rise of Christianity. I'm not sure exactly the title of that book. It's over there on the shelf, but Early Church. He makes a very clear case that the church rose because it literally did care for other people in a world in which nobody cared for anybody but their immediate family. Mm. And that's what attracted people. People worried about the doctrine later.
Right.
What they were attracted to was this community that so lavishly loved each other and the world and cared for the world, were shepherds to the world. Then they worried about what is it these people believe.
Yeah.
We do it backwards. We print our statement of faith on the bulletin. And we hand out, you know, stuff that says, this is what we believe at First Church of the Miscellaneous.
Well, we had a little bit of discussion last week talking about the fact most people that we are at least acknowledging this world that we are trying to reach, the people to whom we are called to preach the gospel. Most people are not walking around going, boy, I'm really worried about my sins today. I'm really worried about having my sins forgiven.
No.
They just don't. They're just not walking around with that. But they are walking around with the cares of the world on their shoulders. They are walking around in a great deal of need. And yes, it does run the gamut from being hungry or at least food insecure to being health insecure despite all of the lip service to for and against, you know, ensuring that everybody has some kind of access to health care, their relationship insecure, their, you know, all sort of manner of insecure.
Their community network insecure. We're disconnected from each other. We never have been before in this world.
So plop down an Acts chapter 2 kind of church where there's all this devotion to one another and all needs are met and nobody's worried about counting up what we have left after we finish meeting needs. No wonder that made such a powerful impact.
This is almost an aside point, but it's an important one for what we're just saying, where it says day by day they spent much time together in the temple. They broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts. Breaking bread at home is not they went in family units back to their own house. Mm-hmm. It meant they went to worship in the temple, the Jewish traditions, because they're still a part of the Jewish tradition there. They haven't split. Mm-hmm. And then they gathered as Jesus Messiah people in house churches for a meal together that evolved into being, I think, the communion, the Eucharist. But at this point, they would go to temple and worship there because they were all, we are good Jewish people. Mm-hmm. You know, this is just a continuation. And then, but it wasn't then, and then we all scatter and go home. They continued as a community together, as a house church in homes, mm-hmm. gathering together and loving one another.
Good stuff was happening.
We got to
get on to 1 Peter. That's the only piece we haven't touched yet. And as you alluded to earlier, it certainly ends with the thought that here we were, sheep going astray. We're returning now to the shepherd and guardian of our souls, Do you want to continue trying to read this passage in this sort of flipped about shepherd thing?
I do.
Help us with that.
Well, what I want to do is look at this line in which, you know, if you start off with, you know, it's Good Shepherd Sunday. What is all this suffering stuff and this mm-hmm. business about? Okay, so you do bad, you suffer, you endure. Okay, I mean, I get that karma thing, but then it comes down and says you do right, you suffer for it, and you endure silently. And it's like, what? That's not right. Mm-hmm. You don't let people abuse you. But then it goes, for to this you have been called. To what? Suffering, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you should follow in his steps. Oh, if Jesus is a shepherd who suffered, by his wounds we are healed, and that he's my example, then I'm supposed to follow him, not in meaningless suffering, but in suffering by taking up the rod and protecting and working on behalf of those, the world, who is in need.
You're back to that image again. Yeah. I am very fortunate. I am very blessed. I don't have to suffer very much in this life the way it's laid out for me. I have pretty good income. I live in a pretty comfortable home. I can, as a good friend of mine used to say about somebody, I can get a biscuit when I want to, you know.
I will soon be able to.
Yeah.
They're bringing Bojangles to town.
Sorry. Oh, there you go. But to willingly go where others are suffering and suffer with them, not to get a star in my crown, not to get a pat on my back, not to assuage some, you know, liberal guilt or whatever it is, you know, that may be there, but simply because Christ bore our sins in his own body, so that we might be freed then to live for righteousness. His wounds healed me. In what way am I called to take on the wounds of another? And just as Jesus did not have to do it, neither do we have to do it, church. Yep. But what will we do? This stuff's pretty strong, Bubba. I wasn't sure we were going to cover all this today. We've raised a lot of issues today. And as always, pastors, these are the places we have to walk around in. And these are the questions we ask. And our blessings on all who will be confronting these scriptures or being confronted by them and will attempt to bring the word of the Lord this coming weekend. Anything else you want to say we didn't get around to today, Bubba?
I believe I done talked myself out.
I believe so. Well, not much left for us to do other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Mama Told Me by Frank Anea. We go out this session with There Is a Redeemer, written and performed by Keith Green.
Jesus, God's own Son, precious Lamb of God, Messiah, Holy One. Jesus, my Redeemer, name above all names, precious Lamb. Messiah, oh, for sinners slain. Thank you, oh my Father, for giving us your Son and leaving your Spirit till the work on earth is done. When I stand in glory, I will see his face, and there I'll serve my King forever in that holy place. Thank you. Spirit to the work on earth is done. is our Redeemer, Jesus, God's own Son, precious Lamb of God, Messiah. Oh,